Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I am so excited that you're here. We have one of my favorite people in the entire world on the podcast today, and that is my amazing, incredible friend, Janet Carson. This is a treat because Janet she's extremely accomplished and also extremely humble. I've been trying to get Janet on my podcast for a hot second, and I am so glad that she finally said yes. So, Janet Carson. After Janet retired from Qualcomm Technologies in 2018, where she was the director of contracts with responsibilities for intellectual property and electronic design automation contracts, Janet focused on making an impact in the community by serving on the boards of community-based organizations and investing personal resources with numerous startup companies. She is an active board member of the Neighborhood House Association, the Regional Task Force for Homelessness, and is a founding director for the Reginald J. Phoenix Scholarship Fund, Incorporated. Janet was the founder and chairperson of Qualcomm's African and African American Diversity Employee Network, which is now known as QBIG, Qualcomm's Black Inclusion Group. Please join me in welcoming my friend Janet Carson to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hi, Janet. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. Thank you so much for being our super special guest. How are you today?
I'm good, and thank you so much for inviting me.
It's our pleasure. So, Janet, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we will jump right into the questions.
Okay. I think the most important thing to know is that I'm retired. And but in retirement, I have found myself to be quite busy. So that's a good thing.
That's awesome. Yes, I know you are super busy. You are in a lot of different things, and some of them will cross over with our conversation today, I'm sure. So, Janet, the first question that I want to ask you is, what does it mean to you to be an activist in 2022? And do you consider yourself to be one?
Okay. I do not consider myself to be an activist. I consider an activist to be someone who is taking their passion to work to better some portion of the community, and with that passion to take it to a civic level or in some way a nonprofit and promote someone that is disadvantaged or not being treated fairly, and using all their mind and talent and treasures to work toward a goal. Mm-hmm. So I don't consider myself an activist, but I do consider myself to be active in doing some of those things. I was thinking about this, and I think one of the most important things is to vote. This need to express what it is we want to see in the country, what we want to see happening, and for exercising the right that some people have died for our right to do, and one of the benefits of living in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Janet, how do we move people from like voting in the presidential elections only to like voting in all the elections and understanding more about the process overall? Because I feel like that's been a big thing. And even I in the past have been guilty of it. I will admit, You know, you're like, oh, you get the ballot and you're like, what is this? There's a, what are you talking about? Now in the recent past, I've been way more involved, but for a big part of my adult life, I only voted in the presidential election. So how do we move people from that to really being active in the election process throughout all the different terms and types of elections and, you know, choices that we're being asked to make?
It is, as you age, you start paying more attention to the news. And still, I vote in every election, but I can't say I'm astute on all of the issues, for sure. But as you see how the politics is working, and you see things starting at the presidential, but then you can see they come closer to you when there's redistricting happening locally or just what's happening in local elections when the mayor is selected, city council people, you see who is supporting issues that you agree with or not. I think as we get older, we start watching the news more. So you start having conversations with people that you're like-minded with and learn from them, learn from each other. So then it's a little easier to get to the ballot box, because you can see, even if you're not voting on everything, you find some things that are important to you and you want to support it. And when you start paying taxes, you realize, wait, where are my tax dollars going?
Right. There's questions.
How are they being spent? Yeah. So
I got questions and I want accountability.
Exactly. You know, and when you become a homeowner, and you have to pay property tax, and you look on the back of your property tax statement and you see all the measures that have been voted on that you're contributing a few pennies to, then you, or dollars, you then say, wait a minute. So
yeah, absolutely. I know a friend of mine really helped me in this process, Skylar McKeown, shout out to Lared Balloon. But she, one of the years, got a whole group of women together to talk about all the different measures that were up for voting. And she brought in an expert and we sat around for like 2 or 3 hours and he went through every single one. Like, he was supposed to be nonpartisan and giving as much of a unbiased account as possible, but he really demystified it and made it less confusing, because they write them to be confusing in some cases. And it was really helpful to do that in community with people of color, in community, knowing that, you know, this is like a neutral person that we're hearing from versus someone who's trying to convince us to vote one way or the other. They were just providing information. It was super helpful. And I was like, I need to do that for every single election, for every single time.
Exactly. That, I think that was wonderful of Skylar. She's fabulous.
She's anyway. Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Janet. So we were talking about activism, and I definitely, like, as you were describing, giving your definition of activism, I'm like, oh yeah, you do that, and you do that, and you do that. And so we at the Inclusion First Project and Institute, we think about activism as a spectrum. And so you can be like an activist as in the stereotype that we think about, or there's all these little medium and large things that people do in their lives throughout their week, the month, the year, that would like tap into like that activist spirit. And I think one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast is because I know just a snippet of some of the things that you've done, from, you know, founding the first African-American group at Qualcomm to, you know, your more recent passion around funding, you know, new ideas and startups, especially for, you know, communities of color that are typically unfunded or underfunded at the very best, unfunded at the least. So I would love to first, you know, I would love to actually just start like with the Qualcomm thing. That's how I know Janet. I got to work under her in the African-American group. And like, what gave you the idea to start that group at that time at that company?
It was not my idea. It was definitely the idea of Lee Wills Irvine. So shout out to Lee.
I need to get her on here. Lee, we want you on this podcast next. Calling you out.
So she approached me about starting it, and I
what year was this? Time. Más o menos.
Let me think. I don't know. It's been
like
10, 11 years ago now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. About 2011, right around
okay.
there. Yeah. And the first, the first thing I did was had to think through how I thought it would operate and what would be needed. I talked to some friends here. We brainstormed a little, and then I kind of put together a process of how I thought it would work. Took it back to Lee. She was so excited because
she's like, yes, this.
Yeah, right. I did a little PowerPoint, and I remember her saying, "Oh my!" And she took it to the VP of HR. So anyway, and then I went about talking to people at Qualcomm, and for me, I used to work for Rockwell in, I managed their small business program. And when you work for a defense company, there are a lot of laws that sort of require the company to have something devoted to either certainly to put their money where their mouth is,
mm-hmm.
and also to work through HR to make sure they're hiring appropriately, things like that. When you work for a commercial business like Qualcomm, doesn't have any government funding, I see that they are not as quick to adopt some of these policies. So to me, I thought 2011, they would have already had such a program, but we were able to take it forward, and it's been funding, and it's grown significantly, and the resources devoted to it have grown.
Absolutely. What do you think your biggest learning was from creating and then leading an organization like Qualcomm's African and African American Diversity Group, now known as QBIG, Qualcomm's
Black
Inclusion Group? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Biggest learning. Oh, the first thing is, people like to be asked to participate.
Mm, say more about that.
They're more than willing to support, but you have to ask them. There's some recognition in being asked, which is just like Lee asked me to do it. I would have never stepped up to initiate the process, but once asked, and with some time to think about it, I was pleased to participate, glad to participate. So I saw that too. So I would go, I asked people to participate. I also put together an advisory council. I thought that mm-hmm. was really important. You need executive support. And so I went and asked people, and they were happy to support. So there's just power in the ask, for mm-hmm. one. And, well, always it's good to have the right people with you.
Sure.
Right? I learned more from you than I'm sure you learned from me.
That is not true at all. Not even
us.
I came a long way later.
Still, so there.
Yeah.
I'm always learning. That's the
having like-minded people with you and people who think differently too. Like, it's there's both, because there's benefit mm-hmm. from both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for sharing that, Janet. And the reason why I wanted you to give us a little bit of back history on, you know, what it looks like to create a group like this, because I know, especially here, in 2022, there's lots of organizations who don't have groups, whether it's a Black group, an LGBTQ group, an Asian group, doesn't matter. Could be a parent group. They just don't have the groups to help to support and create inclusion. And so
I'm sorry to cut you off, but can I say two things about it? So it's important to form and address all your allies, from what you're saying, to include them. Yeah, which it was not my first focus. My first focus, and one of the reasons that I decided to form the group, was because I got tired of walking by Black people and them not even acknowledging me. No head nod or anything. And I think that head nod is just a recognition that we are here together trying to exist. And
mostly white space.
in a mostly white space. So I wasn't getting that acknowledgement. And then after we started Quad, now Cubic, everybody was just, anytime you walk by anybody, there was some acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. I really liked that part. I learned how having community is so important. Mm-hmm. That's one. And the other thing was allyship. So I think I cut you off, but I'm sorry.
That's totally okay. We're co-creating this conversation here. But I love what you said about kind of the before and after environment of like before people were just kind of walking around with their heads down. And there is absolutely a self-preservation, a defense mechanism that happens when you are a person of color in a space where there's not very many of you. You may not want to connect because you don't want to be seen gathering or causing trouble or anything. Who knows what the reason is, but they're all valid, right? Like you're trying to make sure that you're safe before you do anything. And then having even the company acknowledge, having even people say, hey, you know what? It's important for us to meet. We want to meet. We want you to be in this. Okay, now it's a safe place. And you know, it's just about kind of safety and being, this is something I'm Janet, I think I told you this, and I know my listeners have heard me say this before, but I'm writing a book on all the questions that people have about anti-racism. And so one of the chapters covers like the experience of being a person of color inside of an organization and how being involved in things like can potentially be a risk to you and your career because the people who are in the majority may not look favorably on that. And so even knowing that the company sanctioned a group, hey, guess what? It's okay for me to associate, right? And so that safety now is declared and stamped is just, you know, one of the 10 reasons why people might all of a sudden look up and be like, hey, we got this group. Let's like, you know, that's something that we can hold on to, that we can get involved in, and we can start to, you know, really look and seek out our fellow members of whatever the group is, and in solidarity and in community to help us strengthen, you know, our relationship to each other, but then also our relationship to the company and work. Because I mean, you know, I feel like being involved in an employee network, like changed my whole work experience, made me much more committed to the company and the job that I was doing, in addition to everything else that we were creating through the networks. Right. So it's a huge.
Completely agree. Completely agree. Yes. It, mm-hmm. Also, you know, you just learn from when people gather, they're coming from different departments, and mm-hmm. you learn about different departments, and you have a person you can go to as a resource, and yep. which is really important for the working person. I also yep. wanted to say, like, the first thing I did before I agreed to do this was talk to my boss about it. And then I went and talked to the VP about it because I knew it was going to take some time and I didn't want to hear anything later about I was taking away from my job. So.
Exactly. Those are safeguards that you have to put in place as well.
I also wanted to say, because we then also reached out to the community, you learn more about what organizations are in the city, and you get a more sense of community where you're living. Also, so it wasn't just about work. Which is really nice.
It was a lot of different stakeholders being able to connect. That was one of my favorite parts, was getting to help different community organizations get access to resources that they might not otherwise know about or get access to, especially in marginalized communities as well. And there's so many incredible organizations out there. I know you're on the board of Neighborhood House, and you know, there's so many other ones as well. But because of just how resources flow and knowledge flows, when you don't have someone who looks like you as a liaison between the community, a lot of those other community groups get forgotten. And so in having an LGBTQ group and having a veterans group and having a Black group and having a women's group, there's now new ties that are created between the organization and the community as well, from things that support kids all the way up, you know, to people, you know, who are looking to reenter the workforce or who are retiring from it as well. Right. Yeah. And so it's just a huge opportunity.
It really is.
I encourage people who are thinking about joining a group or starting a group. You know, these are some different insights and tips and tricks that you might take as you go on that journey as well. Okay. So back to Janet's activism. I want to talk a little bit about your involvement in in your venture capital involvement, your angel investing involvement. And you knew I was going to ask about this because I'm always so impressed by it and blown away. And I would love to just understand a little bit about your journey, like how it started, like what the middle was like so far and how it's going. Like, what has the journey been like for you? And what got you interested in it in the first place? Like, where did that spark even come from?
Let's see. I definitely, it's a journey. Oh, wow. Let's see where to begin. I love it, but, you know, I only have so many resources, so I'm trying to figure it all out. So
you're on this learning journey.
I am on a learning journey for sure. For sure. My heart's in the right place. My funds are, you know, what they are. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not complaining. I'm saying I wish I had more so I could give more or do more. Do more. I have been investing in startup companies. And you asked where it began. I'm going to go back about 20 years where I had a carpool partner. And my carpool partner had a friend who was an entrepreneur, and he was starting a company, and my carpool partner said he was going to invest, and so I said, I want in, right? I knew very little. I said, I want in, and I gathered up my funds and invested in this company, and it's been my best investment so far. And through that investment, which was difficult to scrape the money together, but I not only within like about 5 years, I got all my money back and I got a little percentage of the company. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I said, wow, oh, this is how the rich get richer. Because
money back,
right?
And they still have an interest in the company.
Exactly. And it's a passive investment, so I keep my job and I still get a little distribution. Mm-hmm. Okay, so those opportunities, especially at that time, didn't come to me very often. I have since had a couple other opportunities and they were a bust. So it's, you know, there's a positive and a negative. You have to be very careful. All right. Now, as I was getting to retire, I, you know, probably in the last 10 years, I've learned more about angel investing. And then as I was getting ready to retire, I had a little more time and was introduced. In fact, one of the people that you had on your podcast is Alex Waters.
I love Alex.
Yes, he's now on Neighborhood House Association, but he introduced me to Misty Rusk, who runs the San Diego Angel Conference. And that is a way for people to learn about angel investing. And you invest in a fund for $5,500. Through that, you can be an active or a passive investor. As an active investor, you are meeting a variety of companies, and with your other active investors, say about 40, 45 of us, you learn about, well, we start out with 125 companies and you narrow it down to 6 or 7. You do due diligence on those 6 or 7, and the fund invests in between 1 and 5 of them, right? So this is, they've only had 4 years of this, trying to grow the startup community in San Diego. So $5,500 is not a formidable amount. You know, it's a way you can start investing and learning from your other investors, which is a really good path. You meet a lot of very good people, both as the investors and the entrepreneurs. You hope for a return within 5 to 7 years. I haven't reached that 5 to 7 year mark yet, so I can't tell you how successful I am. But I can tell you it's lovely to learn about the companies. and to see how founders, how they're thinking to grow, or I've been very impressed with how they've had to pivot during the pandemic.
Sure.
Right. And to think about ways I can support or help them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Is that sort of what you...
Yeah. So do you see, do you see a lot of Black owned or minority owned businesses come through that, you know, that pool of people looking for funding through the angel investor program that you're in?
Yes, there is a significant number coming through SDAC. I've also invested in Portfolia is a has a number of funds, but that are all with to support women entrepreneurs or women in the C-suite. Mm-hmm. And Portfolia has a specific fund called Rising America, and that is for people of color and the LGBTQ community specifically. So there have been a number of companies gone through there. And locally, there is Founders First, which is they run a few accelerator programs for companies of, again, women of color and not women of color, just people of color and veterans to help them. And I've supported Founders First.
That's great. So
that's run by Kim Folsom. Do you know Kim?
Oh yeah, I do. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's awesome. Very good. So what would you say, you know, this is all about learning and sharing. And so what would you say is like a biggest learning or takeaway from your journey on, you know, starting out as an angel investor so far? What's been one of your biggest learnings?
I have to go back to my childhood. Mm-hmm. And my mom always, you know, if she had discretionary funds, she would try and give it to an African-American or a person of color, not give, just support them through mm-hmm. whatever she, you know, if it was something around the house or if it was insurance or
sure.
that type of thing. So I've adopted that philosophy. Mm-hmm. And when you hear the statistics on how little of venture capital funds go to, women or African Americans, I don't remember offhand what it is for African Americans.
Really, really low.
But I can tell you for
less than 10%. It's like even less than
one. Way less than that. Way less than that. But if it's an African American woman, it's like 0.2%.
Yeah.
It's so low. So, you know, we have to help ourselves. We have to help ourselves too. So yes, I'm learning, and then I hope to be able to do more targeted investment, not only through funds. So there.
Yeah, no, for sure. What do you think, this is kind of a two-part question and I'm just kind of riffing right now, but what do you think, what gets in the way of people of color, women getting funding from what you've learned and from what you've seen so far?
I'm going to go with my first thought is confidence.
Hmm.
We don't grow up being supported to take on the world a lot of the time. So it is learning how to position ourselves in the world, and you need a strong support system to do that. It's not easy for a founder, period. You have to have a lot of resources. It's contacts, it's wherewithal. I'm going to go with that first. Now, obviously, we're a lot farther than we've been before in terms of conquering the world, as we can see with our new Supreme Court justice.
Yay.
But you asked me an overall question, and that's just my first
thought. For sure. Mm-hmm. Why do you think funders aren't funding? This is like the reverse of this. So I asked like the, okay, why aren't we getting funding? Why do you think funders aren't funding women and people of color? I mean, outside of the, sorry, if this was going to be your answer, outside of racism and sexism, like what is it? Like, where's the gap? Where's the gap? Because there's, you know, there's great ideas and there's great frameworks, there's great technologies, and there's still these gaps, right?
Yeah. What is that? Unconscious bias?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you, if a person doesn't operate in the world like you do, sometimes you don't see their strengths.
Sure.
Right? So if someone with significant funds, a venture capitalist, is looking at a variety of founders and sees themselves more in certain founders, that's just my guess. And you can have a wonderful idea, but you've got to have everything else to back it up.
Right. That's just like one teeny tiny point on the star, right?
Yes. No,
there is a lot that goes into it. I was thinking about, I was taking a walk earlier and just thinking about how we make decisions. And, you know, we do, as humans, make a lot of our decisions based on like the past. In fact, probably most of them based on the past and our experiences and what we know or think that we know, versus making it on the future and the possibilities that exist. Because the past is, even though it's over, is solid and reliable, and the future is risky and uncertain. And I was just thinking about this just general human phenomenon of being driven by the past. And in that, how do we ever even end up innovating? I mean, obviously innovation happens, but you know, maybe that's happening in a much smaller box or scope than we actually are aware of, because it's just really more of the same because we're able to like connect to that past. There are people who focus on the past or people that focus on the future as well. And I just wonder, I think it's an interesting point that you brought up about, you know, I don't see myself in you. And because I think that the way that I did it is the right way, this can be all unconscious and you're not doing that way and you don't look like me. Now I'm not going to like really feel super comfortable in funding you. And so therefore I'm not going to fund you.
Yeah. Yes. And I think the more we all talk about it, the more we're headed to the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Definitely uncovering these conversations and bringing them up to the surface, and also having different faces at the table, which is why I'm so encouraged by having someone like you at the table that is a deciding factor and influence on how the funds are being distributed for the different plans and programs that you're in, because your familiarity with what this could look like could be different than someone else. Mm-hmm. And that's now another potential lens that we can look through in order to expand who is even getting considered for the money, because we have these diverse faces, these diverse experiences, and these diverse backgrounds at the table. And that's why one incredible example of why diversity is so important to have these faces at the table.
So important. I just wanted to say something about your comment about the past. Things are changing, and it's very slow, but it's changing. And my aunt said this the other day, and I just loved it. Things are not changing fast, but it's steadfast. Hmm. So we all need to be steadfast.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's good advice. So Janet, so I know that you have a lot of different things going on. What would you say has most of your attention right now as you are working on these different projects, the majority of which all sound like they're giving back to different organizations, whether it's the board service that you're doing? Didn't you get invited to join, speaking of being asked to do something, didn't you get invited to join a new board? What was it? Is it the, what's the Rachel, newest board that you're on?
Okay, so the Regional Task Force for Homelessness.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Tell us about the work that you're doing with that. Tell us why you decided to accept their invitation, and then what impact you hope to make by being involved with this organization.
Well, the Regional Task Force for, as we know, San Diego, it's had a terrible homelessness problem. Well, So Regional Task Force for Homelessness concentrates on tracking and counting. Like they did the recent point in time count for homelessness, right? Mm-hmm. For people experiencing homelessness. And they work with city government and county government to understand the reasons for homelessness and how we can make changes. They get grants from the federal government and state government, which they coordinate with other agencies to provide direct services to those experiencing homelessness. And the reason I accepted is because I can see the problem and I'm not sure how it gets solved, but 25%, like I'm not quite positive, but I think San Diego is about 7% African American, mm-hmm. and about 25% of our homeless are African American.
Wow.
That disparity is just disheartening for me. Mm-hmm. And so I thought if I can help an agency that is working to solve those issues, it would be an important one to be involved with.
I love that. And so what has your experience been like so far? What are the things that you're getting to either learn or work on or create impact through?
I do not have direct service time, I guess I should say, except I did participate in the point in time count, which was eye-opening. But mostly I am on the board and I'm on the finance committee, so I'm looking at numbers most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Which is your area of expertise, one of them. What I love about Janet has all these different interests, and I love that, well, number one, they're all like primarily about helping and uplifting people around her, and whether it's, you know, huge problems. Well, all the problems that you're taking on, honestly, are significant between, you know, getting funds to funders of color to tackling homelessness. And you also, tell me about you're a founder of the Reginald, this is scholarship fund, right?
Yes.
Talk to me about that, tell me the name of it, because it was in your bio and I did just read it and it is going out of my mind. But tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing there.
So my family started a nonprofit. It's the Reginald J. Phoenix Scholarship Fund. And that's, of course, a fun one because I get to be with my family and good friends. And we have really, at this point, our main focus is an annual golf tournament. Mm-hmm. And our golf tournament is September 2nd for anyone who wants to participate at Steel Canyon Golf Course.
Here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at this point, so my Reginald was my brother-in-law. He worked for 30 plus years at Neighborhood House Association. When he passed, Neighborhood House renamed a program he worked on, their summer employment youth internship program. They renamed in his honor. We are raising funds to donate back to that program and in the future, like-minded programs. So he was a big advocate for youth and finding them summer employment. So we want to continue his legacy and work in his honor. And our first tournament was last year, and we were really happy to be able to donate $10,000 to Neighborhood.
That's good. That's amazing. So, as you can hear, Janet does a lot of different things, and they're all amazing. They're all giving back. And I would love to know, like, where was that spirit born in you? Because it's not something that you just started doing. Like, this has been, I bet if we took a look at your life and the memoir that I hope to one day read, we will see lots and lots of sprinkles of this throughout your life. And so where does this come from in you, would you say?
You know what? You're making it sound altruistic, and it is not.
It is, though. You're really humble. We'll take a vote from the listeners to I want to know, why isn't it altruistic in your mind?
Well, it started out, it started out because I just thought it would be a good way to meet people. And I guess it's become altruistic in that I find I really do like that. I like meeting people, and doing good feels good.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm like, you could meet people by taking a cooking class.
No, I would not do that, because
you're like, that doesn't sound fun at all.
Then I might have to cook.
Sound fun to you. What does sound fun to you is helping. And so being able to combine this and other things together, it sounds like it's really, you know, that's your sweet spot. And I'm, for one, excited that you're retired, because now you get to spend all your time giving back to all these different causes and purposes. And I wanted Janet to share her story. I would consider her an activist across many fronts, but she's doing a lot of different things, but it all ties into the things that she loves and the things that she's good at. And so it's a really great example of starting where you are and finding the ways where you can have an impact. And I'm not saying anyone needs to do 15 things, because Janet is multi-passionate, but even finding the one
I'm also
thing.
West Indian, so you know.
She's like, I'm out here in the streets doing all the things, which I love. I'm, you know, I consider myself multi-passionate. Maybe a fraction as multi-passionate as you, but it's still inspiring to see and to know that you're out there working for good for us. So we're almost done. I have one more question for you as we wrap up. For that person who is out there listening, they're not really doing a lot, but they want to, they have that desire. What advice would you give to them to help them take that first step and start to create impact in their community the way that you are doing in so many different spaces?
Start with one thing and don't wait to be asked.
Say just, more.
Yeah, just go forward. Start with your friends. Start talking to them. See what it is they do. See what it is you guys like. See what you can do together. Mm. Yeah. And then, just like Skylar did with the voting. Now, I was trying to think the name. What's the name of the organization that provides a nonpartisan view on?
I don't remember what it's called, but
I can't think of it right this second, but just start with your friends. You start with your friends and see what it is they're interested in, what it is they are, thinking about, and combine efforts. Combine your resources and pick one thing. Go for it. I recently got my friends together and we started talking about money. And people don't talk about money enough. So now we meet once a month and we talk about different aspects of money, diversifying your portfolio.
Investing, I'm sure, comes up sometimes.
Investing, we talk about stocks.
All kinds of stuff.
Taxes. Social Security. We don't talk about money enough. And so, yeah.
And now you are. Now you have a group.
And now we are.
Yeah. I love the advice of talk to your friends. Because I bet that all the people who are wanting to get involved in something but haven't started yet for whatever reason, I bet they have an idea about something that they're interested in, or that they are passionate about, or that they're curious about even. Right. And even just having that conversation with your friends about the things that they're involved in, now you get to share the things that you're involved in too. And who knows where those connections might land. Such as like, hey, we're both involved in this. I've been wanting to go to this meeting, but I didn't have anyone to go with. Let's go together, right? I mean, there's so many different things that could happen. And so taking that idea that maybe you're afraid to develop, and just floating it out there to a friend and talk through it and see maybe something sparks that can lead to a greater action. And, you know, We never know what our smallest actions, the ripples that will be created from that, right? Mm-hmm. You might not even see any of those ripples, but those ripples can change people's lives. And that's why we're here talking about all of this today, sharing these stories about our everyday activism and the different change that is being made in the world through our interests, our passions, our skills, our curiosities. Jana is a beautiful archetype of this. And Jana, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the Inclusion First podcast today and for sharing your stories with us. It was fantastic.
You're the best.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.